Welcome to Mo Comics Podcasts. Your host, Mo.
Hello, guys, and welcome to my channel, Mo Comics. I am Mo, and today I have a special guest, my friend Leo. And he is a really good friend of mine, excellent martial artist, and
long time, man.
Well, and I just have to tell this to everybody who's listening and watching, you know, you are not only an accomplished martial artist, you're also a fantastic musician and just a very artistic person overall. So, you know, today in our podcast,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. You know, the reason to have you here in this podcast is to talk about martial arts and what it means to learn the art of war, the art of, fighting,
right?
So, I had a few questions for you, man, but before we jump into the, you know, main topic, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your story and, you know, who you are.
All right. Right now I work as a physical trainer for a clinic, physical therapy clinic. That's my most recent job. I worked at gyms. I worked at martial arts schools teaching. I worked as music teacher. I've worked at kitchens, man. You name it. I've been up and down and kind of bouncing around life a little bit. I'm a kind of a curious mind. So I got myself into mainly the two things that I've had, the more constant things that I've had in my life are martial arts and music. They're actually quite similar for various reasons that I think we're going to discuss
here. I can
here.
See,
And I think there's a bit in the Hero movie. I don't know if you remember this movie.
Yeah, but with the Jet Li, isn't that movie
Jet
Hero?
Jet Li.
Wonderful movie. I remember that.
Phenomenal, very artistic, beautiful. And it talks about a little bit of the art in martial arts, right?
So correct.
I was really in love with that idea of, you know, the flowing movements of martial arts. And so I looked, you know, I had the fortune to live here, you know, in New York, and, you know, I was right next to Chinatown, and I happened to find a really, really good traditional martial arts school when I was about 17, 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And I did that for about 12 to maybe 12, 15 years.
Wow.
So there's technically no belt in Kung Fu. Everybody wears the same color, but everybody just kind of, everybody knows who everybody is.
Yes.
You know? So it's a...
I know this story because, you know, you told me plenty of times and, you know, for those of you who are listening to what Leo is saying, you know, you, Leo, you started with Kung Fu, and on my side, I went with the karate, you know, like you went with the Chinese and I went with the Japanese.
They're all
different, right? Or similar, but different at the same time. They have similar principles, but they, there, I think the one friend of mine told me that karate is like a harsh, a rough leaf, a tree leaf, and that kung fu is more like a green leaf, like more fluid in their motions and movements, right? I don't think that is another simplification of both arts for sure, but like
right.
it was a way to describe what
for
you
sure.
see initially, right?
That's a pretty accurate way to sort of visualize how these arts kind of look to the eye. But I Correct. Think that the principle behind the art is the same, you know. Sure. In a little bit of a historical thing, you know, during the last 100 years in China, there was, you know, essentially a transformation through communism, right?
Correct.
And
yep.
When this happened, they just needed to show everyone, they wanted to unify everything, number one. Number two, they needed to make it very showy. So they invented wushu.
All right.
Okay, and competitive wushu. And competitive wushu became sort of like the Chinese Olympics. You know, it was more art than it was martial.
Okay.
But if you look at the traditional kung fu arts and the oldest, karate arts, they look so much alike. And actually, sure. So.
And actually, yeah. I think touching on that point, I think karate, learning a little bit on the history of it, I remember mm-hmm. Okinawa, actually the birthplace of karate,
right,
was
and, yeah.
constantly influenced Miyagi by the Chinese it, right? and the martial arts brought by from China. You had Bodhidharma, which is if you go way back, before China
right, you
and
go
Japan,
way, right.
you had Bodhidharma teaching the monks how to defend themselves and not get robbed every time, and they learned
right.
this ancient way of art, which in my personal opinion, I think probably martial arts have been around for way longer than we would like to think. Because humans in general, I believe they have to fight right to defend themselves constantly, survive, and not necessarily right. I wouldn't say not necessarily like a martial art as a form as an organized institution like we have it today, but like I would say back in the day you would have a lot of people learning how to defend themselves in a way or another, and maybe not calling it martial arts, but you just have to learn how to fight, right?
Call it surviving. Yeah.
Surviving, correct.
Surviving, yeah.
So, Leo, tell me a little bit more about, you started there, then you, after that, I know that you now are in doing jiu-jitsu, and,
yeah.
I probably skipped a little bit, but please tell us a little bit about your story
sure.
after that.
Sure. So, I knew that there was something beyond that point already. And actually I forgot to mention the fact that when I was a kid, I did take Shotokan karate for about 4 years.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah. And I loved it. I was completely in love with karate, and the sensei had to leave the school. He was doing it through the school that I was in at that time. And I remember getting into a fight with some big sixth grader or something, and I was in third grade.
Whoa. Okay.
I believe. Yeah. And he was a kid, he's a big, big kid, and he had, for his age, I think. And he had the time, like the cat and the steel boot mm-hmm. things were like
yes.
super, yeah, they were super hip. Like everybody wanted. So this kid had one of those.
Okay.
He had a pair of steel toe cat boots. And I just remember this kid just kicking me in the shin, and it was over, and I had that sort of, big, big karate stance, right. Trying to,
yep.
wait for the guy to come with me so I can
Put
come in.
Back, right.
But he didn't do that. He just kicked me in the shin. It was extremely painful.
Yes.
Extreme. And, I went down and he continued to kick me in, and I felt he beat my butt, dude. He kicked my ass. So
I see. Yeah.
after that, the wheels started turning, and actually my mom actually said, maybe this, she knew that I was going through these sort of really tough emotions, and she gave me actually a pair of weights.
Okay.
And he said, here you go, maybe, get yourself a little stronger.
Yes.
And that's where I started seeing the value of conditioning. You know, and I was maybe, I was a little bit of a late, because I actually, something happened in my preschool. So I was a little bit older for my, for the year that I was in actually in school.
I see. So you had, as if I understand correctly, then, you know, with your martial arts training, you implemented also physical training, like weightlifting or conditioning, right?
For sure. And I started experimenting with that. So there was a couple of years, there was a period of time where I just was solely focused. And I think you remember this because you saw me, you met me at that time, right?
Yeah.
That was probably the only fifth grader or sixth grader that was doing like dips, you know, like crazy. Yep. While everybody.
I do remember. I mean, you were a huge dude and you still are. But like back in the day when we were kids, I remember you being gigantic for, you know, compared to the rest of the kids. And, you know, for those of you who are tuning in and listening to us, Leo and I go way back. We've been friends, you know, for almost what, Leo, almost 30 years. No, well, 25
years. Something like that. 25 years plus, man. We were children.
Like, we were little kids. And it's amazing to, you know, to see how each of us have been, you know, evolving as not only as individuals, but as martial artists and as professionals.
For sure.
And, you know, I know that, you know, in your story, you went with the Chinese and the conditioning. Now, something happened where you found, you know, what let you, I want to know what led you to practice, to even dig further and practice something more complete, not necessarily talking about jiu-jitsu, but like the mixed martial arts in general. Now that, you know, you are a current practitioner of jiu-jitsu and MMA and mixed martial arts.
Sure, man. That's actually a loaded question because I, you know, I think I'm kind of like a slowpoke when it comes to most things in life. I take my time with things, and I try to really, really sort of, you know, dissect things on a molecular level and try to really look at them and really, you know, analyze the why of things. You know, why does this happen? You know, what would really happen if something like this happened, right? Because I would see people that were so, you know, when I was a kid, and maybe you remember this as well, in school, there are these guys that were super, super big and super huge and super intimidating for, you know, they were high schoolers, like 6 foot tall. These guys, I don't know if you remember, you know, that when we were in elementary school, of course they look bigger to us.
And being a kid
back then, but they were still big people. It's just one of those generations for, you know, like they're like 15, but they had like beards and they were like, everyone
they just looked like above.
They were more than 220.
They just looked like they were 30-year-olds in, you know, in between kids.
Exactly. Yeah. They've been doing cocaine for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
these people did not look like kids at all.
I do remember that, which is weird because they were kids, but they look like us right now.
Right. Exactly. And I remember one of these guys being like some sort of like taekwondo master or something like that. And he'd been, you know, competing and yada yada, and he had like this mean face all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden this kid got mugged in front of the house. And he just got like apparently got like completely humiliated. Like the guy kind of slapped him around.
Okay.
And why? Because the guy had a knife or he had a gun or something like that, and there was more than one person.
Interesting.
So I saw that and I was like, you know, this guy who is like the biggest, you know, and people tend to idolize people in school, right?
Sure.
Or even in college. It's like, oh, look at that guy. He's the, you know, he's the wrestling champ, you know, it's like, wow, that guy is really tough. You know, it's like, ooh, don't mess with that guy, you know, but it's like in the end, we're all humans and we're kind of, we are tough. We're also kind of frail. So
I agree. I would agree with that statement.
Yep. You know what I mean? So I saw that and I was like, you know, it's like, what did this do? You know, it's like, oh, so if something like this happens, then, you know, there's your chances are minimized. So it got me thinking about, it's like, oh, well, so what if you are, you know, what if you're even smaller? What could you do? What things would be more realistic for me to do?
Sure.
I don't want to get in a fight with this guy that has a knife. I would probably go back, running back into the school that had that big metal door, right? Remember that?
Yep.
I'd probably slam it in his face and try to run, you know? Why? Because, you know, it's a big metal freaking door, so I could smack him with that.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, that started thinking, it made me think about violence in a different way, in a sort of like in a pragmatic way.
Like make it like being smarter about
being smarter fighting, about correct? Things.
Because absolutely. If you don't have, maybe you and I, for example, when we were kids, we were not like, you know, 7 feet tall. We were not, you know, giants, but, and there's, oh, you, all, and even if you you're
got
the
pretty,
giant,
you got pretty big. You're now you're 6 foot tall now.
But you as a kid were gigantic. I mean, compared to all the other kids, you were super developed and you still are, which is insane.
You saw me that way. You saw me that way, but
I still see you that way. But do you know what's interesting? That even though you are, you know, always, there's always going to be somebody bigger than you. Even though you are the biggest in the school, there's always going to be somebody bigger and stronger. So the dude. Thinking, I believe what you're trying to say, like your thinking started shifting towards, you know, being smarter towards the way you fight and not necessarily fight, the way you can defend yourself, right?
Absolutely. So absolutely.
Brought you to jiu-jitsu or...
It did. It brought me to, Krav Maga.
Oh, I see.
And Krav Maga. And eventually it led to Sambo because I was really interested in the military fighting arts and I was interested in, the Marine Corps combat, close quarter combat, things. And I was obsessed with that. If you know, I could show you here all the books that I have about that.
And, oh no, I've seen plenty from your library. I know.
Yeah. I participated in things and I knew the names back then, like Paul Dunak was a big guy back then. Jim Wagner was another guy from the FBI.
Okay.
He likes to call himself Wagner, but it's really Wagner, right? Because it's a German name.
Yeah.
But Jim Wagner. yeah. So Jim Wagner knew what the heck he was doing. He was, I think, director, some SWAT director. So he knew what the heck he was talking about when it came to you know, like knife and, you know, like the, again, being pragmatic about violence. Correct. And I started thinking about that way and it, you know, most people, I think the problem nowadays is that people don't, they think that one thing interferes with the other. Like, oh, well, if you study traditional martial arts, then that means then you don't know how to fight and then it's going to get in the way of your fighting. It's like, I disagree with that. I think that traditional martial arts are important to teach people about about reciprocity, which is something that you should definitely teach younger people.
Sure.
And then after that, and then, you know, have a teacher that knows what real violence is.
Correct. Yes.
you know, and then from take it from there. But I think that, you know, both things actually complement each other, you know?
All right.
So that's how I started thinking about that.
All right. And you know, that's we went all over the place with
we went,
which is awesome, and I love that with the introduction here on my notes. I just wanted to go a little bit over, you know, the things that we were discussing previously, and you know, for now getting into actual, you know, martial arts and people who have not, for example, done any martial arts and they would like to learn, to get started, like, what are the things that that you would think that are important when somebody is interested in starting martial arts? Like, should they go online and find the first dojo that they see online? Like, you know, how, what's the approach that you think would be best? Because I mean, I have certain things I would like to discuss with you as well, you know, as you start talking, but like, what do you think are the best, is the best approach for people who are, you know, getting into martial arts? They have not done anything, or maybe they have a little bit of experience.
Sure. Well, you know, are we talking about adults? Or are we talking about kids? Or are we talking about, that's the thing.
That's a good question, right? Yes.
Yeah, that's very specific, and it's different.
Let's just assume now that people who are listening to this podcast are, you know, about our age, or, you know, young adults, which, you know, it's mainly the case for people who want to learn martial arts. Of course, kids, they would go because their parents
are making them do something.
But, you know, and let me talk about my experience. For example, when I started martial arts, I was a 15-year-old, you know, a kid wanting to learn how to defend myself properly. And the first thing I did, for example, was just going to Google and type karate schools near me. And, you know, luckily, and I say luckily because there's a big chance that I would have ended, you know, in a really bad school, right, with really bad instructors and really bad methods for learning and teaching. And I ended up in a really, really good school. And I think that, you know, for some reason I was lucky. But again, it's a matter of understanding the information. And that's why I think that people who listen to this kind of podcasts, or people who are interested in listening to this kind of stuff, are getting to, they want to get to the point where they have an informed, they have enough information to make an informed decision, right? When they find a dojo or a place where they can actually go and train, because, you know, some dojos out there are pretty expensive, right? And that's something that you have to take into account. Like, what's the do you have the budget for it? Are you willing to pay more for actual good education, or, you know, are you willing to pay less and then maybe not have a good education? And that is not necessarily all the time correlated, correct?
For sure. Well, I think that the first thing would be for the person to really know that specifically. Number one, why do you want to do this? Do you want to do this for, do you want to do this for fitness? Do you want to do this because you know, got bullied, or you live in a dangerous neighborhood and you want to feel a little bit more confident? All these things are important for you to, you know, for you to reach a certain conclusion. And you don't have to have necessarily a full on conclusion. I think that the best way to start is to explore, to actually go to, at least that's what I did around here. I started searching for schools.
Like, and you were trying different places?
Yeah. You know, going to different places, going to see the class, going to, you know, before you had this sort of weird sort of mystery, mystic kind of thing going on around certain dojos, certain schools, and some people wouldn't allow you to see the class.
Yeah, I remember.
Watch or this and that, you know, and that was a bad sign, you know, back then. Yeah. I was like, okay, you can't, you know, I'm not going to see the class. I don't want to be, you don't want to be a part of that. It's probably, you can, you know, you need to be honest about these things.
Sure.
And nowadays that doesn't happen. I don't think that happens a heck of a lot. I think people
do you think that back in the day, now that I think about it, because I stumble upon a few schools like that, I think back in the day with, you know, the lack of information, or not the lack, but, you know, you didn't have the internet like you had it, you have it right now. Having that mysticism, having that mysticism would, like, that closeness, right, would make people even more intrigued. Like, what are you guys teaching? Like, why can I not, you know, get in? I want to go in. I want to see, right? And they it's like that marketing strategy to just get people in. And then maybe when they go in, there is not that good, right?
Right. Well, and that honestly came, unfortunately, from the sort of Asian influence on, because, you know, the Asian influence is, they are very, generally speaking, very secretive people.
Sure.
They're very tribal.
Correct.
And, you know, and you needed to sort of understand and respect that. But 100%. the problem is that most, you know, that didn't translate well to American culture.
Correct.
Because people really don't have that sense of sort of honor and respect. You know, like, for example, in Japan, if you, I don't know if you know about this, there's like this, and this is just a small anecdote. But in Japan, there's a department in the police that is exclusively for lost wallets and lost laptops and things of value that you find in, like, subways and what have you, right? And people, there's a rule that if you turn something in and 2 months go by or 3 months go by, and the person has not claimed it, you can claim the money, you can claim the laptop, you can claim whatever you found.
Wow, okay.
Check this out. In Japan, that fund for the police department has grown into the billions of dollars. Billions.
Billions.
Because not one single person has claimed ever something back that doesn't belong to them.
Different, so very different mindset, huh?
Completely different mindset. So, you know, you can understand where it comes from there. And you can understand how it sort of escalates. And because even though people are secretive, you know that for the most part, they're not going to take advantage of you.
Correct.
They're not going to be, but that doesn't happen here. So it translated, it really filtrated in the worst way.
So the
worst away.
Yeah, like the mix, I think the mysticism, it permeates in the Western culture in a way, which, you know, it's great, but also you have maybe sometimes not the best people implementing those traditions, right?
Not at all. Yeah, and right. in the words of John Adams, mystery is a convenient excuse for absurdity.
That's actually a really good quote. And well, now that we have gone through this part, you know, getting started.
I'm so bad at podcast, dude. I just trail off. Sorry.
No, I love this stuff. And this is how, for those of you who are not familiar with our conversations, this is how our conversations go. We started talking about martial arts and we end up in another corner of the universe talking about pancakes. Right. And how did that happen? Well, you know, I don't know. You started
the philosophy of pancakes.
And which is fantastic. I think it's a good way to, you know, to exercise our brains and, you know, just talk about a lot of interesting things. So, you know, you were mentioning the fact
that
people
find it interesting, right?
What?
We hope people find it interesting. Hopefully it can be useful.
Hopefully, you know, the two, three or four people who are listening. But I believe that, you know, there's valuable information in what you're saying, And, you know, for what it's worth, I think that people who are interested in learning and getting started in martial arts, and those who are already experienced in martial arts, are going to find this very useful, especially because you're an experienced martial artist. You have been through many, many different schools. Well, not many, a few schools that have given you the right tools. And because being being in many schools doesn't necessarily mean that you're a good martial artist, right?
Right, or that you even know how to defend yourself properly. Honestly,
correct. And now with martial arts, once you find the school, once you find the place, once you have your dojo, what do you think are the next steps? I've talked about, you know, maybe setting goals. What, do you have a goal of being a black belt? Well, let me just get into this martial arts school, this karate, this jiu-jitsu or kung fu. And I know kung fu might not have the belt system, but, you know, what's your goal? Do you think that goals are important when it comes to...
But they have... Yeah, man. I think goals are important for anything you do in life, right?
Correct, yep. Even for, physical training, right? Like, you lift weights.
Even for... Yeah, you want to say, hey, I want to be on a lower body fat. I want to be able to endure. I want to be able to. And that's why, that's why people do marathons in the first place. People are in, they get excited about the idea of a marathon or something like that. I think, though, the difference being here specifically, that in martial arts, just like actually in music or other forms of art, you're an illustrator, so you know this, you don't just get good at being a good painter or a good illustrator. You need to work at it, it takes a lifetime,
It's a constant process of learning, right? Never ending learning process.
Yeah, and it sounds so cliche to say it. You know, it's like, people probably have heard this a million times.
Sure.
But it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to really internalize it and understand that it takes time. It takes a lot of time.
It's not like you're gonna get into a school and in the next 2 months you're gonna be Bruce Lee, right?
Not at all. Not at all. The body is very unforgiving, right? You know, so if you stop training, physically speaking, for example, for about 2 weeks, you can already feel the difference, right? So people have this idea, and especially nowadays, because, if we're talking about the present, right?
Sure.
So people have this sort of Instagram mentality, week one, week two, week three. And I think that, if martial arts serves a purpose today, it's to kind of smash that to the ground, like life doesn't work that way.
Correct.
Most things in life that are valuable, that are truly, truly valuable, take a long, long time.
I agree. I would agree with that 100%. Yeah. And, with that, tagging on your comment, do you think that, this setting goals is also tied up with creating a schedule? Do you think that maybe having a schedule for how many times a week you're going to train, or like how important it is to, in your opinion, at least as a martial artist, to set up that schedule? Like, maybe I don't want to train 5 days a week and let me do it for 3 days. Right. And I have to make it no matter what, like at least that's how I started. I have to make it Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, and I have to go those days. No matter how I feel, I will make it to the dojo and I will train. At least for me, my experience, that helped me out. But what do you think is the importance of that? Like a schedule when it comes to training?
Oh my gosh, it means everything, man. I mean, here's the thing. As a physical trainer, I do realize, and I've realized throughout time, that people have different ways of attacking problems, mm-hmm. and going about things. And I often find that the people that are most excited about training and starting to set goals. Oh, I want to do this. You know, I want to be a black belt. I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to do this. I find that maybe, and I don't have, you know, empirical data to back this, but this is my experience. Most people that tell me that are the people that get frustrated the easiest.
Really?
And tend to quit.
Wow.
Yeah. Because they are so excited about trying to get to that place.
Sure.
That once they find that they can't get to that place in the amount of time, it frustrates the heck out of them. And then they start, and then that super, super high, you know, high of achievement and all this idea, they become sort of, you know, obsessed with the idea of reaching a place. And all of a sudden, when they don't reach that, it comes down. It comes crashing down. And then you have people, and that's where the coaches come in.
So,
and I think that's also an incredibly important part. You know, a good coach is not only somebody that can know how to defend, you know, and be, but he or she needs to be a people person.
So
he needs to be able to communicate and relate to people.
Leo,
you can't do, yeah.
And what you're saying reminds me of in jiu-jitsu, for example, with you see it a lot in the dojo, in jiu-jitsu, when some people, not everybody, but some people who reach the point of blue belts in jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. you see it a lot where they achieve these because they're so excited. I want to be a black belt. They achieve the blue belt. And once they have that blue belt, they see that, oh God, this is actually going to take time of my life. And I know enough, so I can just, and it's like, you see that decline, right? And some of them just quit altogether.
Right.
They started going every day. And then after the blue belt, it starts slowing
right.
down. Like I'll go 1-2 days and then some of them disappear and you don't see them anymore around. And I say that, I didn't introduce myself, but I say that because I coach, at a jiu-jitsu
sure.
gym,
Brazilian
jiu-jitsu gym. And I see, you know, I see some of that happening. And, it just reminded me of how important it is to have a goal, as you mentioned, and
right.
also have, a schedule where, you know, you prioritize certain things over, like my training, this is my priority over, this amount of time. And I need to continue my training no matter what. I think that, at least in my experience, that has helped me out to go
sure, man.
To push
sure.
through tough times.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely. And again, it depends on certain people. Certain people come into this, you know, maybe in their mid 20s, 30s, and or early 20s, you know, and they are all, you know, these people are already successful people. They've gone through college. They have good jobs. They're not really worrying a lot about a lot of things. Especially the people that come for like, or individual attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's personal training, self-defense training, they want to join school, but they can't make the schedule. So they go on private lessons, which are more expensive. You know, you find that these people sometimes they don't have necessarily super tough lives or anything like that, but
sure.
But they still need that sort of that discipline. So I think you have to play a balance of making the priority so that eventually becomes a habit. Once it becomes a habit, your body is going to naturally ask for you to do something.
Correct. Yes.
An activity.
And you know, Leo, that reminded me because you can make analogies with that
mm-hmm.
and anything else, right? But another thing that that it reminded me of is the compound interest. And you see it a lot in, you know, financial, the economics and how finance works, right? Like you put money in the market and you see it growing very slow. And at some point, compound interest is a powerful force. You have your body, you have your body in a regimen, in a schedule where you train every day or 3 days a week. And then at some point your body starts, you know, you don't have to force your body. Your body naturally, as you mentioned, that training and that workout just compound, and it becomes a force of nature. You know, you start doing it because you need to feel better. Your body requires that training, and I feel that every day. Where I mean, and of course you do that too. I know that you do because you've been training your whole life. And it's if I don't train, it is insane. That's something that happens to everybody who trains. If I don't train, I feel that I am failing miserably on that day. If I'm not training, if I'm not doing something that requires physical activity, whether it is martial arts, weightlifting, or something, I believe that I am failing that day. Which reminds me of a quote that I saw the other day. I think was Tim Kennedy who posted it. It said something like, "Sweat more in training, so you bleed less in battle." Which, you know, it really, really resonated with me.
Yeah. I you know, when I'm training people that, for example, at the clinic, people that are, you know, they're already in pain, you know, they have all sorts of problems, you know, these people that need help, right? This is a different demographic, but it's just to make the same example. Sometimes people tell me, you know, I'm in a lot of pain, you know, why are you making me go through this? and I'm telling you, it's like, well, I try to be funny about it because sometimes you need a little bit of sense of humor.
Sure.
You know, I try to tell them something like, you know, there's some method to the madness and I am making you go through this pain now so that I can actually make your life easier in the future. It really, you know, there's a way to go about this systematically. I actually have, I used to be that way. And I think, you know, that sort of discipline sort of feeds, a great, you know, it feeds greatness and it makes your heart grow and it makes your, you know, it makes you, it can breed nobility, if you will.
Sure.
But I also think that itself, that sort of, one more rep mentality also has its limits. And I think, again, this is something that I've come to learn in my later, you know, later years after going, trying to push through extremes, personally, there's a systematic way of, for you to, and again, this, and I'm talking merely on a conditioning level, for example.
Sure.
You want to push hard, but you don't necessarily want to feel that you are worthless because you didn't train for a week and a half.
Correct.
Because something happened.
And I when I say that, I take it to the extreme, right? Like in my personal experience, because I am so used
right
to
here,
it
man.
To a point where I can say that without actually diminishing my self-worth and, you know, me as a person. I know
for sure.
I know that I you know, I deserve to rest, correct? The same as you and same as anybody else. But
right.
It's just this mindset that
but
gets
you
me
have
going.
Developed the habit, and it's absolutely 100%. I do think that there are moments where even within, you know, you and me, you know, like the people that are in these sort of mentalities tend to sort of also bounce against that wall, and then all of a sudden you have an injury. When it has a shoulder injury or knee injury or back, you know, and there's a point in which the body also says, okay, that's enough.
That's enough. Correct.
That's enough.
It's like you need to rest, which
you need. It's yeah. It's a
which is
yang,
a very important part of actual, you know, growth, rest,
for sure.
Rest well, is what allows your body to grow, your muscles to grow.
Oh yeah.
Which,
you know, everything
is fantastic to have the mindset of, you know, constant training. We have to train, but you also need to rest. You need your 8 hours of sleep. You need, days where you actually dedicate your body, your time to recover. And
right. You need to feed your body the nutritionally dense and good.
Get
food
good nutrition.
If you want
good food. Correct. I mean,
and everything.
Let's tie all this up again with martial arts, because this is actually really good advice for martial artists. But now that we went through, you know, what's the schedule and how to make fit that into your life with, you know, mm-hmm. actually not necessarily forcing yourself, but having a set
right.
of goals that would allow you to place a schedule.
So and my short answer to that, mm-hmm. and I wanted to say that, and then I started deviating completely.
No. And it's fantastic. But yeah.
Yeah. Is you need to be honest with yourself. You need to be honest with yourself, because again, and most people think, and this is the common epidemic, man. They see something on Instagram, they see something online. I'm going to do this 7 days a week, 2 hours a day, yep. yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, the weeks keep piling up, and then people, it starts to wear them down.
When the time comes,
and
when the rubber meets the road, it's not happening. You see that, you see that a lot with, is that, and you said it really, really well, that Instagram mindset, right? Like things that are 3 seconds, caught your attention, and then I want to do it. And then when you actually want to do it, yeah, and when you actually do it, you find out, oh, I might not be doing this 24/7, right?
Right.
You got to be committed. You have to be honest also with yourself, like you said.
You have to be honest. And for some people, actually, I think that some people actually need to also learn to, some people need to understand and make that a habit. Once you create the habit, you actually need to learn how to relax. You need to learn how to relax, because if you don't relax, you're always, and this is something, for example, that I struggled at first with learning music, for example, because music, for example, is everything is so, and it's very much like martial arts. It's just that people don't really think about it, but it's everything is about technique at first. Everything is about technique, and technique takes years and years and years and years and years for you to get just something decent out.
Crazy, right? Like just to get something decent.
Just to get something decent, you know. So you can impress the local crowd with a couple of chords and some, you know, what's that guy's face? Ed Sheeran songs.
Sure.
You can play those in 2 weeks. Sure. but to learn how to express yourself through that, and to actually develop technique in music, it takes a lifetime, man.
And Leo,
so you need to learn how to relax.
That's the small line between, you know, and I think they actually interconnect pretty well, like art and science, because it is a science. You learn when you learn music, it is not only art, but it is a science where things.
Well,
have a method in things actually follow patterns and follow.
Right, it's mathematics.
Mathematics.
It's mathematics.
Correct. And I believe the same happens with martial arts as well. I mean, it is an art. The name art is embedded in it, right? So,
well, yeah.
Besides being an art, it is a science. I mean, they're both interconnected in a way that it's fantastic.
You couldn't have said it. I mean, that's 100% true. Jiu-jitsu is purely biomechanics, so it's
sure.
physics.
It's exactly. It's you're playing with. I mean, you're using physics to not having to use all your strength, and you're being
exactly.
smart about it. It's like you're.
Technique.
It's like when you hear about people who work, they work hard, but also they work smart, right? Like you don't necessarily have to work hard and break your back, you know, 24/7 working. You can also work smart and learn how to work, learn how to get better results by just thinking about things properly and in a smart way, right?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I completely agree. I like to define technique in especially in the martial arts sense. I like to define technique as the most efficient application of strength.
Interesting.
That's it.
Yeah. The most efficient application of strength. I like that approach because, you know, we both have fought before with plenty of individuals and practice with many, many people. And, you know, you practice with people who are bigger than you, same in my experience. And I believe that sometimes, you know, there are certain things that you cannot avoid. You cannot avoid fighting somebody who's bigger and stronger. And, you know, your technique is going to, you know, trump everything else, but you have also the fact that, you know, if you train your body, if you condition, and you're fast, you're strong, you lift weights, your strength is also part of your technique, in a sense, right? Yeah. Where you can actually apply it to make the technique work better for you. And I've seen it happening a lot, at least in my experience in jiu-jitsu and in kickboxing and karate and all the different things that I've experienced in life, in my martial arts life.
For sure, man. I think that people that are aware of their bodies and its capabilities, on an instinctive level, they're, you know, we can start and, you know, dissect down all the systems and the cardiovascular system and the muscular system and how they interrelate. But I think that if you learn instinctively how your body reacts, and how, if you have a certain amount of muscle in your body, for example, how much does that, the blood vessels dilate so it makes you slower, and that happens to everybody regardless of your conditioning, you know, how long are you able to sustain that? And once you have experience with that, you can better control your efficient movements and you can see the picture of a, for example, a combat situation or a sports situation as well. And that only comes with experience, man.
That thing that you're saying actually ties up really, really well with the next point right here with consistency and discipline, which is something very important that I wanted to discuss with you because, you know, with all that has been said about scheduling and goals, do you think that, discipline plays a big, big role in learning martial arts and being better, but does it translate to everything else? What do you think consistency and discipline will do for you when it comes to practicing martial arts, in your experience at least? What have you find out?
I have found out that discipline is everything.
good way to put it.
It really is because, I mean, discipline is a concept that comes from certain, you know, you can also say discipline is kind of a synonym to habit. Right, it's just that usually discipline has a more positive connotation. You can have a bad habit, you know, you can be a smoker and that's not being disciplined. You can say, oh, you're disciplined at smoking, right? So usually discipline, technically it's true. Yeah, you can be disciplined at, you know,
anything you want, like being a good criminal.
Exactly. Hey, man, you're disciplined.
That's good discipline if you know how to, you know, apply it.
Right.
I mean, it's a weird thing because whatever you apply it, you're going to excel.
Your discipline has led you to just swipe up that line of cocaine and just make it all disappear.
Exactly. And, correct, right?
It's you incredible. Have Kung Fu, my friend.
Dude, and I mean, it's crazy, but what you're saying is absolutely, absolutely true. The fact that you apply yourself and you train every day and you know, you pretty much become perfect. I think that discipline is a way to achieve perfection. You're never going to be absolutely perfect, right? But it is the path to perfection. That's what I found out, at least.
It is the path to certain freedoms. Sure. I Jocko Willink says that, right?
Discipline equals freedom. Freedom is a really interesting word for a lot of people. It means very different things, right? But I think that you know, Jocko Willink is I admire Jocko Willink and the philosophy.
I like Jocko. Yeah. I like Jocko.
Philosophy like behind Jocko. Behind his words are they resonate pretty well with my own philosophy and my values, and I think that it's discipline is something that you can apply to everything, right? Like not only martial arts. And
no, everything.
It'll take you to on a path to perfection and to
yeah. And even then, man, I think that your own perception can sometimes be misleading. You the people that are nonconformists as it is, and this is maybe something a little bit sad of me to say, but I don't think that the people that are nonconformists are going to never, they're never going to find perfection because they're always going to think that they can do better.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, again, this happens in martial arts, happens in music, happens in art, specifically those three.
And it drives the art even further. I mean, you're not satisfied with your technique. You're not satisfied with, I mean, you do a takedown, right. You do an armbar, and you're right. Like, I could have done this better. What do I need to make
a thousand times better?
Yeah, and what do you need to make that better? Do you have to twist your body a little bit to the right, a little bit to the left, and it pushes the art to evolution? That's pretty much the word, evolution.
Absolutely, man. I'm sure that you know Bruce Lee or George St. Pierre,
correct.
You know, somebody that's living, goes to bed every now and then and says, "Oh man, I wish I, you know, if I would have moved a little better here, I wouldn't have not taking those punches from that guy, and this and that, you know. Oh, I could have done, you know, I kind of suck. I'm not that good, you know."
That's a really good, impression. Yes, dude. And do you know what you talked about Bruce Lee? And he's very interesting to me because he was one of the the first persons, the pioneer in you know, modifying the art. Like he brought this traditional Chinese martial arts, and then he just drifted away, knowing that they could do better, and they still can do better. Same thing with us. I think we like to think that MMA and jiu-jitsu and wrestling and all this art that you're seeing right now, we have plateau, right? We have reached the top, which you know, it might be true in certain aspects, but I believe that there are long ways to go in the perfection of the art of fighting and combat, and I think we can still go further and push it even more.
Oh yeah, for sure. And the other thing that actually for me specifically, you know, I'm kind of penitent about this sometimes. I like to think that things are they're constantly. I don't like to conclude that, you know, this is so new. I think in specifically in the case of martial arts, there are so many things that have just been sort of rediscovered.
Sure. 100%.
I think that there is something to be said for the fact that a lot of these things were already there, but just, you know, certain very dedicated individuals that, you know, put their minds and their lives into making, you know, a comprehensive system out of things. Like Jigoro Kano was one of them. Bruce Lee was another guy, you know. Sure. And the Gracies were, you know, another group of people that did this. And even other lesser known people, like, you know, like Carl Gotch, the wrestler, who you know, who sort of brought, they brought, you know, English wrestling, and all of a sudden it became the sport of wrestling.
And I heard, Leo, that also even Vikings had a some sort of wrestling art. I forgot the name right now, but I know that they had a wrestling art.
They had a sword art form. Mm-hmm. And I was super into that years ago with my good friend Brian, who you know, who is, you know, also phenomenal martial artist.
Yeah, which would be awesome to have him here for an interview. I would love to have you both discuss with you the same
very topics. That dude knows what he's talking about. I mean, obviously, I mean, he's a psychology PhD, and he's also a phenomenal martial artist. And we talk about these things all the time, obviously. But there's a lot of things that come from traditional martial arts, and Bruce Lee just needed to sort of, he removed the, what he did was that is that he removed the dogma of this sort of exclusive nature of, you know, Asian martial arts. And
Leo,
and just made it. Yeah.
Quick say, quick note here. We have, I just Googled the art, and it's called Glima.
Yes.
G-L-I-M-A. Glima. That's the
Glima.
The folk wrestling practice from the Vikings, just for those of you out there. It was just bugging me. I needed to to research that. Please continue. I just wanted to make that note.
Yeah. Man, there's so many things that are brutal martial arts. I mean, Greco-Roman.
Yes.
Again, for example, that thing I told you about, that, you know, people know, in, for example, in BJJ, people know that the Kimura comes from Kimura Sensei, who put, you know, Gracie in a Kimura.
Made the Kimura on Helio Gracie. And
he named the Kimura. But actually, Kimura learned it himself from Carl Gotch. And Carl Gotch was a catch-can wrestler.
Well, and, you know, it really, it's interesting.
You're four, man.
It's interesting because you have all these ancient forms of fighting. And going back to Bodhidharma, right? We talked about that, how he trained all these monks. And what?
The Indian wrestler.
Yes, the Indian wrestler, martial artist. And I believe that it goes even way back. We just haven't found, I mean, and that's of course.
I'm sure, dude.
That's of course my theory on martial arts. We have to have a way to survive, whether it is fighting with sticks, throwing stones,
in the mud and trying to beat each other to the ground. Absolutely, man.
Correct.
The Sumerians were here
go back everybody. To even the Bible, right? Like go to Cain and Abel, right? One
right?
killing the
Absolutely,
other one with
man.
A rock. And the art of violence has been somehow embedded in our culture.
Fortunate or unfortunate, as they
And that's another philosophical conversation that actually we should actually have. The art of violence in our society, how has that redefined and how that keeps redefining our path as society. And as individuals. I think that somewhere or another, we have to learn how to be violent in a way that allows us to defend ourselves and the ones that we love, and also to understand the risks of people who are violent and want to abuse that power and use it on others to just do evil, correct? I mean, I believe that it's a good thing to know violence and you know, apply it properly. As that's how I believe Jordan Peterson would mention
right.
in many of his right. his podcasts and talks. Like you need
right.
to you
right.
need to know you need to be a monster. That's if I believe correctly what he said correctly. I think it's you have to be a monster in order to be virtuous, because that would allow you to understand how to you know, harness that power and use it for good. Like being a
right.
monster and not acting like a monster, that makes you virtuous. If I believe
that's a beautiful and poetic way of putting it. And I think that is true. That is true for a lot of people. I don't, you know, here's, I personally, I think that there are some people in this world that are sort of are best left as the beautiful flowers that they are, whether they are male or female. There are people that, you know, it's like that guy I talked to you about, who's a photographer. He's brilliant. This dude is a brilliant mind, lives in Chile, and he grew up around our time, and everybody and every guy around our time liked, you know, like Dragon Ball and all these, you know, and Kung Fu and the series and this and that, and all these things were happening, and the Van Damme movies and all
yes.
that stuff. And every kid was into that. And I speak to this guy, and he never watched. Like, yeah, you know, I saw those things, but you know, it wasn't my thing. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, is this guy being a?
Are you living in a cave?
Who are you? But he's a great dude. He knows, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Sure.
I know that. In my point being is that also. You know, because we're supposed to be promoting martial arts. We're supposed to be promoting discipline and,
sure.
and I'm all for that. But I don't think that it is, I think that everybody could benefit from learning a good deal of it. Right.
Sure.
But I personally don't think that it is for everybody.
100%. I agree. I mean, it's, and of course, if we start diving deep into that philosophical aspect of violence and martial arts, we can be here forever, right? Like,
yeah, man.
Because it is interesting because, I mean, if you're not good at violence, then somebody else who's better at violence will come and will conquer, will, you know, force you to do the things that you cannot, you know, resist or say no to because they are better at violence. And somehow or one way or another, I believe, you know, our history in at least in human history has been defined through violence and wars and you know the conquering and forcing other people to do stuff, which, you know, whether you are on one side or the other, whether you think that's right or not is a topic for another podcast or another discussion. But all I'm trying to say is that I would like to have a discussion with you about that because it's interesting. It's just something, it's not for everybody. I believe that this is not, you don't have to be good at violence to understand violence. You don't have to even watch,
right.
you know, as you said, you don't have to watch the movies and grow up with all these cartoons that we grew up with and
all these cartoons.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Like Dragon
yeah.
Ball, Dragon Ball Z and all these cartoons that in a way show you how.
Rurouni Kenshin, Jesus.
Yes,
yeah.
Which they're fantastic. I mean, they give you this sense
phenomenal.
Of I want to learn how to be this badass. I want to learn how to be
yeah,
better.
Like
how to fight.
This strong and honorable sort of warrior that protects people and is, you know, in charge of things and is a good force on this earth. I mean, a lot of these were great, great, great lessons, you know? And I think a lot of people could use things like that. I think a lot of people, especially nowadays, people that live in constant anxiety, you know, and, you know, thinking that they have to do better. They have to prove themselves to the world. And I think, you know, as, again, as cliche as it sounds, you need to prove yourself to you.
Exactly.
And, you 100%. Know, and martial arts can 100% do that for you.
And now that you're talking about that, let's just jump to the lifestyle, because that actually ties up really well with lifestyle, martial arts being a way of life, or a lifestyle, correct? So we have, you know, you have, let's say, all these people who are listening, they found this place, they started, they set up goals, they have a schedule, they are constant and disciplined, and now they have, you know, let's go and talk about the lifestyle, what it means to practice martial arts as a way of life. Is it something that, you know, when you were, when you started martial arts, and now that you have been practicing all these years, and you're still getting better at it, do you think that it became part of your lifestyle? Is it something that you cannot drift away from? Not in a bad way, but like saying, I'm just trying to say, is martial arts an intrinsic part of your life? Is it so interconnected and intertwined to you as a person that when they say martial arts, you instantly recognize that as part of your life? Is that's what defines Leo? Do you think that that's a fair way to say it?
I think that I don't know if it defines me as a person. I think that this is going to vary from person to person. There are people that are, you know, to which martial arts are absolutely everything in your lives, right? And I think that some of these people are super admirable. I would say personally for me, I think it's definitely a part of my life. I think it's something that I really, and this, you know, even, you know, I might quit today. And 20 years later, I'm still going to wake up one day and I'm going to think about doing certain thing. And it's like this, it's already a part of me. That is for sure. I don't think that it is what defines me as a person, but I think it's a very important part of my life. That's for sure. Because it is part of my self-expression.
I see.
And it is part of the way that I connect with the world. And I think that that's the one of the bigger things in martial arts right now, is being able to connect with people and to give and to share. And that for sure is something that is very in tune with how I think about martial arts.
And that, I think that's very important, because some people, and not that there's anything wrong about it, right? Some people define themselves solely as martial artists, which is fantastic. And that if that's their life, that's, you know, good, more power to you, correct? Sure. But it is important for people to know that practicing martial arts doesn't necessarily have to become your whole lifestyle. Although if it is like what you're saying, it really defines a big, big portion of your life, and it represents a part of you as a person. Same way as, you know, you with music, that's another big portion of your life. And as an artist, you express yourself with music, with violence, with, you know,
music and violence.
But It is a beautiful thing to see that, you know, art takes so many forms that it becomes a lifestyle, and it just takes different paths, and it can just shape shift in many beautiful ways. I mean, in my case, for example, with multimedia design and illustration and all the things that I like to do art wise, you know, visually and with my hands, it translates. Mm-hmm. On that artistic side, the illustration side and the sign, and for you with the music,
the illustration of violence,
the illustration of violence. Yeah, no. And then we both, coincide with this, big important piece, which is martial arts. And that's, you know, a big thing that connects us, both besides our friendship is martial arts. And I think that,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that being recognizing that as a lifestyle in a way that defines you, not necessarily 100%, but defines a big part of your life, is absolutely important to recognize. So and there's no there's right. also no problem if your whole being is just martial arts. I mean, there's
people not at all, not at all. It's not artists. As long as it's not affecting you personally, that is getting in the way of your life and your family, unless you have a, you know, like really crappy friends or something like that, then do martial arts all day. But if you have valuable people that are around you and family that loves you, or you have a wife or husband, and all of a sudden you see that, you know, it's starting to drift yourself, you know, away from them in an unhealthy way.
Sure.
And I would say, okay, then you need to reevaluate what it is that you need and you want out of this. And, you know, again, being pragmatic about things, you know, what do you want out of this? But otherwise, man, do it all day, you know, do it till the wheels fall off, you know?
Yes. I completely agree, man. And now for our last point right here, we have the I have here, never stop the learning process. So, of course, some people, as you mentioned, start martial arts. They find out that it is a steep process, hill to progress into that black belt, and people are shocked when they reach that black belt and they find out that that's not the end of the road. Some people reach black belt and they're like, oh, I'm supposed to know everything. And no, my friend, that's just the beginning.
So, welcome to stage two.
Stage two of infinite number of stages that are ahead. And, you know, it's interesting because I heard your perspective plenty of times, but for those who are listening, what do you think about the always continue learning, the fact that education is not something that ends, and once you understand that fact, you will be on your way to success. Do you think that is that resonating with you and your experience in martial arts? Do you think that constant learning is something that always has to happen?
For sure, man. I mean, I can't stress that enough. Again, just to mention music or martial arts, you never, ever, ever, ever stop. You don't stop learning. And again, that feeds again into the same ball of you created the habit / discipline / and then knowledge feeds knowledge. The more you know, the more you're able to better acquire information. And there are going to be, you know, it gets harder too. It gets harder.
It never gets easier, man. The more
nothing
you know, the more you
easier.
Know that it's really hard to, you know, the more you know, the more you know what you don't know. It's just scary to know all the things that you don't know, because you are aware of the fact that there are so many things that you need 100 million lifetimes to learn
all these things. You'd be reborn like 16 times. And yeah. and this is something again that is so useful for today, because we do live in the era of the pseudo intellectual. Everybody wants to be right, you know, and everybody thinks that they know better than everybody else because they just saw this. I'm all for efficient information, and I think we now have the technology to give people, you know, wonderful pieces of information. But unfortunately, that's not really how things that once you start getting into subjects, you really start to understand. And that's a wonderful, that is a wonderful process to get to the place where you know that you know something, but you can see you can peek your head in the horizon and see an endless sea of mountains and see and just know that you don't know anything. Anything at all. You don't know anything.
Reminded me of Dark, for those of you out there who are fans of Dark, the series. What you know is a drop in an ocean of things that you don't know.
For sure. The Dunning-Kruger effect, man. And again, people that think that they know a heck of a lot and present themselves
as knowing masters, right?
Oh yeah, that's a bad sign right there.
Stay away from those people.
Stay away. In all fields.
That's absolutely right. Not only martial arts. I have a very I've seen plenty of people out there, at least with the internet, where these guys present themselves as the all-knowing masters. They can, you know, knock you out without even touching you. Guys, stay away. Stay away. If you're looking for a dojo, if you're looking for a place to train and learn, train with somebody who is always, always willing to learn and constantly is in the search of perfecting his art or her art and just in that path of being better. And that's through discipline, for sure.
For sure. So absolutely.
Leo, I mean, I think that, you know, we just touched on all our points tonight, and I believe that
we went back and forth like 40 times.
Back and forth on all this point, which is fantastic. I love doing this. I hope that you people out there don't mind us doing that, because I believe there are plenty of information that is interconnected, and it just touches back and forth with plenty of all these points that we discussed.
And hopefully people will have, you know, maybe, you know, hopefully people will have questions, you know,
well, yes, 100%.
Comment section or, you know, whatever.
If they do, that would be
incredibly helpful for us too.
Please give us your feedback. We would love to hear from you. And for those of you who are interested in more of this type of podcasts, please comment and let us know that you know, you like this type of stuff. We will continue doing this stuff if we hear that feedback from you. And if not, I think we will also continue doing this kind of stuff because I enjoy talking with you, Leo, about, you know, all topics.
We can talk about this forever, man.
Yeah, all topics: philosophy, music, art, martial arts, and anything that has to do with, you know, the betterment of you as a person and the constant search for that, not necessarily perfection, but, you know, just being
the beauty of the human condition.
Correct. The constant evolution and conditioning and perfection of you as an individual, whether it is physical, mentally, and in all other aspects of life. So, Leo, I think we can wrap this up. And brother, if you have anything to say, please do.
If you live in Denver, go to Kurusan and take a couple lessons.
Kurusan Jiu-Jitsu, yes. For those of you out there, Kurusan is our Jiu-Jitsu and kickboxing school, academy. The main instructor or main professor is Professor Chumba, And we'll put some links in the description so you guys can go and check it out. You're welcome to come and train. Leo is one of our certified coaches, coach and instructors there as well. I am a coach at Kudusan Jiu-Jitsu in Parker, Colorado. And guys, again, this podcast is designed for you, who for all of you who are looking forward to train martial arts and who have been training martial arts and just want to hear a perspective from just two random guys who have been doing this for a little bit, and they just want to share their experience. At least I want to do it, and I know Leo, you want to do it as well. So
yeah, man, I think it's a cool thing, and if we get feedback from people and their questions and their opinions, and that's also, we learn from that, you know.
Yes, 100%. All right,
awesome, man, thank you for having me, man.
Of course, brother. Let's do this more often. And all right, guys, so to wrap this up, thank you so much for listening to Mo Comics Podcast. This has been our martial arts podcast today, December 2020. And I'll see you guys on the next episode. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to Mo Comics Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, and I'll see you next time. Your host, Mo.